Krishna. It's almost 7 a.m. and I'm here in a village not far from the town of West Prem, which is on the bank of Lake Balaton. Camped out in a big gymnasium, school gymnasium. Ladies are on one side of a big curtain, men are on the other, and I've got my tent set up inside the gymnasium. Reason being, we're quite close to the highway and it's supposed to be noisy outside. I arrived here quite late in the evening last night, 9 o'clock. It took about 3 hours, or even more, to drive up from Pitch, where we were. And I've been answering the editorial queries from Kaishori Devadasi on Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani. They are more or less finished. At least my work with her is finished. These are called the V3 versions. Once we're both satisfied with these corrections, then they move on to what becomes the V4 version, and that's what I work on Kesha Bharati Maharaj with. So right now he's got really the bulk of the files. He does just sort of a last polish, and from then it goes to V5, which is what Nalini Kanta deals with for translation, and I'm having to start to interact with her on some questions that arise in translation, and those questions are also really relevant to the English editing and copy editing, because she's discovered some flaws in the English. This is the way book writing and editing is about, is every time you go over it, you just keep finding new things, but sometimes you just really have to let it go. I'll be staying here in the gymnasium, spending part of the morning going over all the information that I've received about the GBC's proposed stand on Damodar Maharaj case, which you may or may not be familiar with. And then I'll be going out on Padyatra for about an hour or so, and after that the leaders of the Yatra will be here. We'll be having a management council meeting. They're also coming on Padyatra, and then we'll have a meeting in the early afternoon, and then usually devotees get back around 5 or 6 when they have supper. So Guru Puja is just about to start here, and I'm going to have to give class afterwards, so I'll answer some questions that you've set in. I haven't done those for quite a while. Here's one from Brother Kumar Das, who says, could you explain a little about Vairagya and Tyag, these similarities and differences? More or less, the two words are one and the same. They mean renunciation, Vairagya and Tyag. And if I'm correct, Srila Prabhupada almost always uses them in that context, as does Krishna and other authorities throughout our scriptures. However, probably the unique usage of Vairagya is that it's used in qualified terms. Srila Prabhupada uses the terms Yukta Vairagya and Markata Vairagya, or proper renunciation and false renunciation. And this is, of course, to echo Rupa Goswami's teachings about Yukta Vairagya, that renunciation doesn't mean to give up activities, but rather to act in a way that is serving the purposes of the Lord, or engaging the results of activities or material objects in Krishna's service with detachment. Whereas Markata Vairagya means false renunciation, in which someone may distance themselves from activities or sense objects and yet harbor the desire for the same. So the essence of both Vairagya and Tyag, the essence of renunciation, is to give up attachment and be free from attachment. When such real detachment exists, then one is insulated or protected from material activities or material sense objects. And that is a real wonderful art that devotees have to cultivate, but at the same time they need to be honest and not just mouth words like Yukta Vairagya, but be able to appraise themselves to see how much they are actually detached, and in the absence of detachment, how much they're using these words, Yukta Vairagya, as excuses for feeding their attachment. And that type of mentality is really foolish. Not only is it foolish, but it's actually offensive to the holy name. Therefore, Sadhu Sabadan, Vaishnavas, beware. There's no substitute for honesty, and honesty begins with being honest with ourselves. Now here's Bill Duke from Nashville, Tennessee. He says, if I remember right, I read several years ago that it was a GBC law that devotees are not allowed to make propaganda for one spiritual master. If this is so, can you give us some information on why it is? Well, that's more or less correct, Bill, although propaganda is probably not the right word. But when new people are brought to the Krishna consciousness movement, and they're introduced to Srila Prabhupada, Krishna, our teachings, and way of life, then they should be able to do so and become familiar with all of these things without necessarily being guided to a particular spiritual master who may happen to be the preacher's spiritual master, or who may be the spiritual master of most of the devotees in that temple. The reason being is that deciding on a spiritual master should be as a consequence of having matured in understanding the need for a guru based on proper scriptural study. It should be a decision which devotees make themselves, and it's not something that is imposed upon them. Therefore, devotees' enthusiasm and worship for their spiritual master should be kept more or less to themselves in the public domain of ISKCON, or it should be kept amongst Svajatiya, God brothers and God sisters. In this case, I'm talking about those who are initiated by the same spiritual master. And it should not be imposed on others. They have a right to make their own decision based upon their own hearing from advanced devotees. The other aspect of this making propaganda for spiritual master is that when devotees, spiritual masters, let's use the word, I don't like it so much, I'd rather prefer sannyasis, senior Vaishnavas, GBCs, when they're preaching in public, they should be advertised when such advertisement is necessary, not on the basis of their being gurus, but on the basis of their actual service in the society, such as a sannyasi, a grihastha, etc. This is the rule that you're referring to, Bill. And Shuvo Roy asks, what do the scriptures say about killing insects like mosquitoes and cockroaches? Does it incur sin? I was interested to read in Shruta Kirti Prabhu's diary that Srila Prabhupada allowed him, even encouraged him to do away with mosquitoes inside his mosquito net. And Srila Prabhupada quoted that they're aggressors because they're coming to sting, therefore one can protect oneself. And Shruta Kirti Prabhu would kill the mosquitoes. In Bhagavatam, it's also stated, though, that one should not kill such animals, innocent animals. Therefore, we should at least strike the balance between these two instructions from the point of view that unnecessary killing of animals, such as what they do, for instance, spraying an entire forest to kill off all the mosquitoes, is sinful. If there are mosquitoes who come to attack you in your mosquito net, or one of them lights upon you, is stinging you, and you swat him, that's acceptable. So this is an example of how one activity may be acceptable under circumstances, but not under another. And as far as cockroaches are concerned, cockroaches come where places are dirty. They don't attack us, although certainly they're scary creatures. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada generally said that we should keep places clean, and if places are sufficiently clean, then they won't come. And if they do, then just like mice and other pests, catch them and take them to some distant place and drop them off in someone's front yard or backyard. I got a message from Sridhar Prabhu, who's a long-standing devotee in Bhaktivedanta Manor, and he's writing, saying that he's traveling around Indonesia distributing books. I hope you weren't around that tsunami that just happened now, Sridhar. And he says many people take the books, Muslims, Buddhists, Christians and Hindus as well. He's been there for 2 months and now he's planning to go to Jakarta. Hare Krishna, Sridhar, please keep distributing those books. Sounds wonderful. Wish I was there. My god sister Ramadevi is writing from Mayapur. Amongst other things, she's probably the best seamstress there is. And she says in Bhagavad Gita 9:30, Apachit Sudarachara, Krishna says that even if one has performed the most abominable activity, if he's performing devotional service, he's rightly situated and should be considered saintly. The emphasis in the purport is on accidental fall down. As a child protection officer, however, I see many abominable things that can't be considered accidental, but which are conscious actions, sometimes sustained over a long period. How does one learn to hate the sin and not the sinner then, as Srila Prabhupada said? There are at least two kinds of sinful fall downs or situations. The one is when someone does perform some accidental fall down. The devotee falls from the path of devotional service and he corrects himself and doesn't do it any further. In that case, we should see that fall down as really being accidental. And even if it was not, even if it was premeditated, then the sincerity of the devotee should be understood by the fact that they come back to the path of devotional service and they really do reform themselves. The other one is when we see that devotees repeatedly continue to perform sinful activities and they aren't properly situated. Krishna said, sadhureva samantavya samyak. In other words, he's not properly practicing, he's not properly situated in Krishna consciousness. One evidence of that is that he continues to perform the same offense over and over again. In that case, obviously, devotees have to be dealt with somewhat differently than those who are fully reformed. They should be distanced from those to whom they commit offense or some such measure, and they should be watched with caution. In other words, we may help the person as long as that person wants help and appears to be sincere about it, even though he may be repeatedly falling down due to weakness or bad habit. But in the absence of a desire for reforming, if someone's a repeated offender, someone doesn't really fall at the feet of Vaishnavas and ask them to help overcome this bad habit, then such devotees need to be distanced at a great distance, especially when we're talking about child abuse. With child abuse, even in the first category, even the one-off offender, especially sexual child abuse, they are separated from children, period. If it's physical abuse and of a lighter measure, in other words, that someone has slapped a child or something, then it will be up to the local authorities, CPO officers, to draw the line, what is acceptable as one is not, in terms of that person still being in the vicinity of children. I think Ramadevi knows this better than I, but in terms of the principle of hating the sin and not the sinner, our mood should certainly be repulsion for sinful activities, while at the same time we see that this is the unfortunate state of a conditioned soul, and how we deal with that conditioned soul, whether we allow him to engage in service or her, whether we allow them in the proximity of Vaishnavas, or whether they're banished altogether. We should make such decisions on the basis of the activities they perform and try and remain well-wishers of those individuals. Otherwise, for anger and hatred to be in the heart of a devotee is an obstruction in his own spiritual life. Thus, we should act in response to the behavior pattern that we see, trying to be compassionate, and yet at the same time not allowing our compassionate nature or our sympathy for Vaishnavas blur the type of punishment or conduct that needs to be meted out to those who are offenders and sinful. I hope that helps. I'm getting a little distracted by the kirtan in the background. And Krishnananda Prabhu, last question, will I be at the Black Sea Festival 21st to 30th of September? The answer is it will not be possible for me. I'm just too booked up this September, and I hope that I will be able to come next year. Okay, Hare Krishna, see you all soon.